Welcome to Radio Gorgeous. Gorgeous lives. Because if nothing else, Henrietta Lovell, the rarity lady, has had, so far, a gorgeous life and plans on continuing it for quite some time. She is the author of Infused Adventures in Tea, but well known as the Rare Tea Lady. Tell us why you're the Rare Tea Lady.
Well, I have a company called Rare Tea Company, so that's the rare bit. And no one really knows where tea in my life ends and myself begins, so I'm just the Tea Lady. And it's funny because I will be walking down the street and no one has to remember my name. They're like, oh, Tea Lady. It's easy, happy, and I feel really proud.
So I started reading Infused, and several words came up for me that I had never heard of, or ideas that I had never heard of.
Okay.
And I want to give our listeners a flavor of your book because it is jam-packed. It is part memoir. You give us tutorials on making tea, recipes.
Cocktails.
It is an adventure. It's personal. It's professional. It really is loads.
Thanks.
I read a lot. And these three words will be emblematic to people, for me, of your book. The first one was Iron Goddess of Mercy.
Yes.
That was the first phrase that came up. The second phrase that came up that had quite a pop of blowing my mind was a hand-painted cardboard coffin. And the third one, which is so normal to you and endemic to your world, but completely, I was like, wow, there is such a thing, a temperature-controlled kettle, of which there are two sitting right next to us. I've never seen one. I've now seen two. So your tea journey, I want to start at the beginning with your aunt when you're little.
Yeah, so I grew up in a kind of scruffy part of South London where there was a lot of us crammed into a house and we didn't have very much money, but we had relatives in Scotland and they had a lot of space and some of them were quite grand. So we would go all pile into a car and we would go and visit them for afternoon tea often. And we'd start with tea, and the children weren't given tea. The children were given squash and sent out into the garden. But this one grand lady, she wasn't really my aunt, but she's like my dad's cousin or something. We would always go for tea with her, and she was called Diana, and she always sat very straight in her chair, and she had this, you know, there's a drive coming up to her house. And she would tell stories of her childhood in India. She grew up in Lamb where tea grew.
Okay, so the seed was sown then, but the match was really lit when you had that Iron Goddess of Mercy tea.
Yeah, the Taiguan Yin. She really is, the Taiguan Yin is a kind of oolong from Anxi, and she has this name, the Iron Goddess of Mercy. And it's an extraordinary name, isn't it? It resonates with you, with anyone who hears it. You think, God, I want to partake. I want to know, I want to try. Should we break and I'll make you a pot?
Yes.
Okay, let's do that.
RadioGorgeous.com.
Sweetness comes out.
Yes, but I think people forget that tea is a plant and it has carbohydrates in it. All plants have carbohydrates. And with careful crafting and careful infusion, you can really reveal those carbohydrates, that sweetness. Isn't she lovely?
Wow. I can see why it inspired you. Talk to us about the different types of tea. Because I was quite surprised to know that it's one plant. When we talk about white tea, black tea, oolong, pu'er, green tea.
It's all from the same plant, like all wine comes from grapes. So there are lots of different varietals of the tea plant, and like a rose or a vine, she can be manipulated into different new varietals. But how you process it and when you pick it will determine what kind of tea it is. So you could essentially use the same bush to make white, green, oolong, black, pu'er. And it's that gentle, careful crafting that will give you the different varietals. And it's really interesting that there are many books about tea. And I got approached by many publishers asking me to write, could you write a story of tea and tell me, okay, this is where tea comes from, this is white tea, this is green tea. And I tell that story through my book more anecdotally, because my mind just doesn't work like that. I'm thinking of a million different things. So the information is in the book, but it is more of an adventure story than a book that will lead you through the facts, because there are so many brilliant books like that already out there.
You are an adventurous you are also on a mission.
Yes.
To do away with the tea bag and bring us back to how we used to actually drink tea, is leaf tea.
In Britain, in 1968, only 3% of people used a tea bag. It's a very modern invention. It came along with smash, which was, you know, rehydratable potato that was ready, smashed for you. Bread in a plastic bag that would last for a long time because it had lots of preservatives in it. A pudding that you could just add milk to. That was, you know, the late 60s, the early 70s.
Time saving.
Yeah, and we got so excited by it, but we sort of abandoned those things now. You know, you probably wouldn't eat ravioli from a tin too often, maybe once in a while. So to think that the tea bag is the only kind of way to get tea is so sad. There's nothing wrong with a tea bag. You know, drink tea bags as much as you want. What I'd love people to do is explore that world beyond. You know, and that I don't talk about teabag tea in my book because it doesn't fill me with real pleasure. I don't think you can fall really deeply in love with the flavour of it. It's just nice. It's just good. But there's a whole other level of joy to be had.
Okay, so you start this company, but then life sort of falls apart and you carry on. You get cancer, your dad dies, and yet still... show must go on.
Well, actually, the other way around. So my dad died first. That made me leave my corporate job. I was like, he had a lot of plans. He was a young man, 65. He was going to retire a little bit, do a little bit of work that he liked, but really go off and enjoy his life more, which he'd never really had the chance to do because he was working so hard. And it was so sad to see that happen just as he was retiring, you know, part retiring even, with all these ideas and schemes. And actually, and the time and the money to do them. I thought, shit, I don't want to be that person. And so I set up I left my corporate job and set up Red Tea. And then I just bought my first tea in China when I came back home. And I had a cancer diagnosis myself, which was, you know, some people said bad timing, but actually, in retrospect, I think it might have been quite good timing because I didn't have a job that I had to do, go back to. I didn't have the health insurance and all the rest of it, but I didn't have a commitment to other things apart from to make this company grow, and making this company grow something that I was really excited by. So rather than being the sick lady, and there was a lot of illness and treatment, I was young and cancer's very aggressive when you're young, I had this focus that I was going to set this tea company up, and it was something that really drove me forward and was a beautiful, joyous thing to look forward to rather than just going back to work.
Yeah, so it actually helped give you hope and give you focus.
Yeah.
Radio Gorgeous. Podcasts for women.
I really encourage people to read and discover Infused. But tell us about some of the real absolute surprises, one of which came to you in a cardboard cornflakes box.
Yeah, I'd been quite narrow-minded. You know, I think of myself as not a narrow-minded person, but, you know, we all have our areas. And I was travelling a lot to China, buying these extraordinary teas that were made in the same way for thousands of years, and I was quite China-centric. And I went to India because I knew there were some beautiful teas there, and then I started to, you know, branch out. But I didn't go to Africa because I assumed that tea from Africa was the sort of bulk tea that went into tea bags. And that's true, you know, most people don't realise. You ask people where they think tea comes from. People sometimes say China, whereas the amount of China tea in Britain is minuscule. I mean, I'm one of the biggest importers of China tea, and I'm tiny. Rare tea is tiny. Some people say Yorkshire. There's no fucking tea in Yorkshire. Let's get that straight. And then this man, Alexander Cathcart Kay, Alexander Kay, Alex, he sent me some tea. He read about me in Time magazine, and he sent this little box of tea. And then I opened it up, this packet covered in stamps, and it was made of a cornflakes packet. And I went like, oh my God, what's this tea going to be like? And you know, if you saw my office, I get sent tea all the time from all around the world. I get a lot of tea, and it's not always very good. I'd love it to be good, but it isn't always. And I didn't have high hopes for this one coming from Malawi. And then I opened the packet and I drank the tea because I, you know, respectfully wouldn't just throw it away. And it blew me away. It was amazing. It was really life-changingly amazing. I couldn't believe it. And I was not long later in Malawi with Alexander saying, okay, what can we do? And he showed me this whole world of tea that I hadn't experienced, because it wasn't just that black tea that he sent me. He's making amazing, you know, white teas and oolong teas and pu'er teas and herbs. And he's a real pioneer, a real innovator.
And he's also tending his tea in a way that you really want to champion.
Yeah, so that's the real point of the book. I think I love, what I really wrote this book for was to champion the people behind the tea, because it's not just, you know, you go to a supermarket and you pick the cheapest box on the shelf and you think, well, it doesn't really matter, it's just tea, and all tea is tea. That's not true. There's people behind that tea, and industrial tea is not particularly interesting in flavour, and you try it side by side with Alexander's tea. I challenge anyone to take your normal big brand tea bag and try it beside Los Malawi tea from Alexander and a blend we make from the estate. Brew it exactly the same way, and you'll be like, one will taste very flat and one-dimensional, and the other will taste like a whole world of tea. It's amazing. And you'll never go back after that. It's just taking that first sip. But the impact on industrial tea, so that is very few jobs. It's mostly done by machines, machine picking, machine processing. It's very few jobs, no, very few skill, very few labour, very seasonal work at the best. And so these communities that are based around tea have no jobs. And somebody is going to get in the neck for that cheap tea. And the life expectancy on gardens where the industrial teas are grown in India and Africa can be as low as 40. And that's medieval. We can't have that. We can't be party to that. So the customer has a responsibility. We all have responsibility with our choices. And it's not a lack of supply. It's a lack of demand. You know, Alexander could produce a lot of really amazing tea that would be loads of skills and jobs and labor if there was more market for it.
All right. So get your leaf teas.
I know. And care about those people. So I talk about those people through the book, the people who are trying to make good tea. Because I don't think you should drink tea that's horrible and to save the world. You know, sometimes it's hard when you see a label on a box that's championing something and you think, okay, I should buy it because it's good, but actually it tastes awful. Like, these guys are making quality teas that taste amazing, and in return they would like a reasonable price for it. That's it. That's as simple as that. You know, it will flood your life with pleasure. You'll be like, fuck me, this is amazing, I'm so glad I drink great tea, why have I wasted all my life? And then they will be like, hooray, we can now have enough money to send our kids to school and have proper health care, and we're all benefiting, and we're all brothers and sisters in the globe now.
You say in the book that you're generally quite a shy person, but tea emboldens you as nothing else. You are not intimidated by travel in a way that I found quite anxiety producing just to read on the page. You know, where you have no idea where you're going. You don't speak the language.
At the beginning, I was super young as well. You know how brave everyone is when they're young. I was, you know, my
dumb
early 30s and dumb when I started. So that was super, but it was for a mission. You know, if you'd asked me to go and do that, it's like climbing the tree for the almond blossom. If you'd asked me to go without any knowledge or, you know, or friends into an unknown place, but I didn't have a mission, I would have said, no, why would I do that? Are you crazy? But I suppose I had this desire, this need to find this thing, and I knew exactly what I had, you know, my mission set. And I was like, okay, if that's what I need to do, then I need to go there, and somehow I'll find a way, because there's always a way. Also, what I've learned over the years is when no one else is doing something, it's probably because that's probably a reason that you're stupid to try and do it, but it will give you a gap in the market. It is so much more exciting to do something that no one else has done. So there was no leaf tea in the UK, you know, really, really hard to find. There was, you know, one other tea company, I think, when I began. And then there were just, you know, the big guys. And you could buy leaf tea in a couple of department stores, but it was very limited and not of the kind of quality that I was looking for or finding in China.
Radio Gorgeous, created by women for women. RadioGorgeous.com.
Then you have the other side, which also seemed probably more daunting because it was known, is all the chefs that you then have to convince.
Well, I didn't know I would have to. At first, I was stupid. I thought, oh, I'll just bring nice tea back. Everyone will want it. No problem. Done. Job done. And the press will want to talk about it. And
everyone's going to want to buy it.
Because the product's so good. You know, I knew the product was amazing. So I thought, well, if you've got a good product, it will. But of course, everyone was like, what's leaf tea? No, why is it not in a bag? You know, only 3% of people were drinking leaf tea, and I don't know who they were, but I never met them. And yeah, and then journalists would be like, white tea, that's tea with milk. And, you know, everyone was very dismissive. And it wasn't until I spoke to a sommelier called Katie Exton at Shea Bruce restaurant in London, and she was telling me all about the wine. I was like, you know, everything you're telling me about this wine is so true of tea, you know, the pH of the soil, how this rain falls from, you know, season to season, you know, what the gradient of the field is, you know, how much sun is in the morning to the afternoon, when the cloud cover is covering at different parts of the season. It will really affect the field of tea like it would affect a vineyard. And terroir is so important to tea. It really matters field to field, just like two fields in Champagne won't produce the same wine. Two fields in a garden won't produce the same tea. And she got pretty excited. She said, well, I'd love to try. And it was her that first started to... Because I felt like I was banging my head against brick wall for a couple of years. And then she said... Oh, no, and I was sick and I had no hair and no eyelashes and... Anyway.
Great sales pitch.
Great sales pitch, yeah. Tea is really good for you, by the way. It was her and then Mark Hicks. Actually, Mark Hicks, a journalist, did put it in for a taste test. And they said they decided not to run the taste test because no one's interested in tea. But Mark Hicks did taste your tea and say it was the best tea he'd ever tasted in his entire life. I thought you'd like to know, the journalist said, so thank God for her. And then I got in touch with Mark Hicks, who was at Caprice Holdings back then, and he championed my tea and when he opened up his new restaurants, Hicks restaurants. So thanks to Mark. I mean, that was he opened a lot of doors for me in the beginning. And then the chef world is all friends with each other, and there are absolutely so many lovely people in there. So he would introduce me to someone else, and they would. And yeah, they are men. And generally, but of course, then there are amazing women like Angela Hartnett. She was one of my first adopters. Claire Smith, who ran the Royal Hospital Road and now has Core. They're really fascinated by flavour. So if you've got chefs and sommeliers are excited about flavour, so you give them something amazing, they will love it. It's not, you just have to get them to try it.
Chefs understand there's three things we talk about: local, sustainable, you know, the provenance.
Yeah.
Your tea has it, and they have taken you to their bosom to the point where you stayed at the Claridge's.
I know, they looked after me. You know, people have been so beautiful because chefs love to look after people. But it was a bit early in the day in 2004 talking about provenance and story and sustainability. You know, we only work with farms that don't use pesticides and herbicides. And they were confused when I said I'm not putting the organic stamp on it. That was a big thing because... a lot of, especially the retailers, they wanted to see the organic stamp. And I won't penalise the small guys who've not used pesticides and herbicides ever, but they can't afford the certification. It's very expensive. And the certification bodies are for-profit businesses.
Yeah.
So,
and you have... That's what's wonderful in the book, because what really comes across is the stories of these people. And I feel that every time this tea... this Iron Goddess transports you back to the port in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
And that when you taste another tea, you can smell the fires that have smoked it.
There's so many amazing stories behind them, and there's so much skill and craft and labor and love. And there's, you know, there really worlds of flavor, aren't there? You know, I get a chef in my tasting room and they just want to play. They want to... Nuno Mendes was really funny. He's a wonderful Portuguese chef, and he works very close to us, and he got so excited he couldn't sit down because he tried so many teas, and there's caffeine, you know, we're drinking caffeine, you know, and you think, oh, it's not that much, it's just tea. But when you've drunk like 20, 30 cups of tea, or even little ones with a high ratio, you start to get higher and higher and higher and giddier and giddier. And he was so funny because he was just like bouncing around.
On a personal note, I mean, you are fueled and you are... incredibly energetic, and you want to be, if a TARDIS could be created, you'd be the first in there saying, yes, please, I need one. I need to be here and here same time.
I want Scotty. Definitely want Scotty to beam me around the place.
Exactly. And slowing down for you, there's a chapter in the book, slowing down for you at home. Those are the moments when that circularity of fear comes back, where your mortality... cancer returning, not enough time, sort of comes to you and sort of sends you right back out the door.
I've got to really jump out of bed in the morning. I've got a mission. I need to help my farmers more. I need to help people understand tea more to make that revolution happen. And I do believe that if we cared for tea like wine and bought it for flavour instead of price, then our farms, the tea farms around the world, all tea farms around the world would thrive like vineyards. That would be pretty amazing. But I have, over the last 15 years, kind of made myself ill by working too hard and trying to struggle with illness, and I did have cancer again. And that taught me that actually I'd be more effective if I took better care of myself, and I could do more by doing less. And I'm not that young anymore. I'm still young. I feel really young, actually. I know I'm very young, but I've lived a few years.
She looks like a young little petal.
Yeah. I'm young, but I've lived a few years and I've learned a few things, thank God.
Okay, I have one more mission for you.
Yeah.
Today is the first day of England playing Pakistan at Trent Bridge.
Yeah.
And it is approaching the tea interval.
Ooh.
Now, what would you serve? You know, that soporific effect, yeah, postprandial sort of sleepiness has set in. Yeah. And they need something to perk them up.
I'll stay in the Indian subcontinent, but I won't choose India because there's, you know, political biases in that area. And we'll go up into Nepal. So we leave both India and Pakistan behind. We go into the beautiful province of Nepal. And Nepal is not just the Himalayas. Amazing, amazing country. But up in the low Himalayas, the foothills of the Himalayas, is one of some of the most beautiful tea. And there's a little garden called Junchia Bari. And there's a little film about it on my website, actually, if you can find it. You go about us and then drop down to videos and you'll find it. Beautiful, beautiful little films that a lovely photographer made for me. But this garden has the floral, lightest black tea you'll ever have. And you'll, if you're used to drinking tea with milk, black tea with milk, this would be the one that would just change your mind forever, because it's so lacking in tannin. It's so complex and beautiful in flavour and so sweet and interesting and elegant that you wouldn't want to drown it with the milk. It'd be like putting lemonade in your oat madoc. So this one would really give you that bright, fresh lift and that energising, you know, black tea lift that we want without the kind of the soporific slick of milk.
Excellent.
But if you wanted to have it with something, and you thought, okay, I do want something a bit stronger, I do want a bit of tannin, I'm going to make it a bit stronger, I'm going to use boiling water rather than dropping it down to 85, which would be great for black tea, then you would eat it with a scone and clotted cream and the jam, because then that would balance out the tannin. So you don't need to put milk in your tea if you're going to eat it with something creamy and sweet.
Fantastic. There we are.
There we are.
Cricket tea all sorted. Thank you so much, Henrietta.
Pleasure.
I'm abuzz.